control the waters till the slobs give up today. What do you expect to find? Some fatty on your line. Don't you remember anything I said when I said don't trust?
Folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. Jay Bird.
Steve, it's what's happening today?
President's Day sale, the best day of the year.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. President's Day sale runs through Monday.
I don't even celebrate Christmas as hard as I celebrate President's Day. Have you put up
your Muskie fish? Yeah. It's all about President's Day.
Decorations yet?
Yeah, got some wigs and stuff from the old days.
Powdered,
you know,
wigs.
George Washington, my friends.
Got some wooden teeth and a powdered wig. Marched around his yard, folks.
Yep. So. Bring on the celebration. That's what I always say here in Saint Germain.
Yeah, big festivities every year. They have the President's Day parade.
No, they had radar runs yesterday. It was a little different.
What's a radar? What they had a what?
Snowmobiles drag racing.
Oh, wow. How fast?
45 degrees, baby.
Was it 45 yesterday? Jeez.
Yeah, and today. Yeah, it's
well,
beautiful.
What do you know? It's better than it's same as it is here. I got absolutely smoldered. It was one of those deals. Went out, go to hit the major. And, you know, it's cold and it's rain, but it just won't stop where you're just, like, wet. No matter what, I have on two layers of rain gear, and it's just hitting the face, and it's like, okay, my chest is wet. Oh, now my pants are wet. I give up. Give up. Nothing beats wet and cold.
Well, you don't want miserable clients, you know. That's no fun for them either.
Nobody's having a good time. Speaking of good times, great oldies, you're dialed in.
You are.
You're dialed in to AM. I mean, whatever. I can't remember I almost said AM 14. What is it? 14. There's a creepy station I found in my town. I only want to say it. It's like the worst. I don't want to say it. It's not right wing. It's just conspiracy AM radio. It's amazing.
Really?
Okay. Oh, yeah. I don't know if I'm going to have to find out if it's streaming. I was flipping around in my truck and I found it, and it is like. Freaking lizard people are running Blount County, Tennessee. It's amazing. I thought it was fake at first, right?
Lizard people?
Not really, but close.
Oh. They talk about Bigfoot and stuff like that on that channel?
No.
You got those big mountains and forests and everything, aren't you?
No freaking wild people, per se. But more so, it's just weird. It was amazing. I'll have to record it and see. It's as bad as the local news clips you send me.
I'm interested now.
Like the Illuminati are running my rural town. So maybe they are. I haven't noticed, but you know, I don't know what interest they have here. But it's pretty amazing. I'll record a bit. I could literally. Just run a tape deck all day on that station and just be endless intros of just crazy people talking. It's
nice.
It's kind of amazing. We're, you know, flat earth, that's rookie stuff. You know, that's
they're way beyond flat earth.
This is like this was high level stuff. Yeah, this was the Smoky Mountains are a base for the alien overlords kind of shit. It was pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which is true. Mm-hmm. We can all agree, which is true. Anyway, new and featured products, new comings and goings. What's going on here? Like, it's been never ending this year with new stuff showing up, which is great.
I mean, it's
variety is the spice of life. That's what I was saying on Valentine's Day. Didn't land too well. Tried my hardest, but
We got refilled on those new Tranks, those 400Bs.
Nice.
You know, the new Tranks model is out. I don't know if we ever mentioned that, but
we have.
Yeah, the Trinx 400 is the best-selling reel in muskie fishing, flat out, has been for a few years. You know, it's just flat a great out. Reel. And, yeah, they came out with a – they dropped the – last year, the original model was just called the A model, so now it's a B model, and it's got a basic difference, I think, is just going to be that that dialed-in feature on the right side if you're right-handed. No, on the left side if you're right-handed. It's got a 0 to 10 dial for fine tuning, so it's one of those things where you can set it once for light bait, so then just fire and forget. There it's good go. To go. So
we got new hats.
We got a lot of new hats coming in. Three of the models came in yesterday or something like that. Yeah. More coming.
Very cool
designs.
Yeah,
I got from Jim Stewart, the Tube Screamer.
There you go. Got patches and flags. Got them all. Get out, get crazy. Oh, it's nice to have variety. Once again, some cool new hats. Well, we got freaking, who is that? Oh, Violent Strike. They've got some new chatterbait offerings there, it looks like. Maybe they had them last week when we talked about it.
He expanded on colors on a lot of different models. So that's what came in recently. So that was a lot of pictures to take. And that line is growing. Yeah. Very popular.
Very good.
Well, he specializes in weedless stuff, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So not all of it's weedless, but a lot of single hook options for really weed-free, you know, inline spinners and chatterbaits and surface baits and stuff like that. Cool local company.
Yeah. Gabbing with Jay. I think very shortly, guys, you're going to be shocked. Could be a matter of days before you can get your hands on Critter, Menace, and Banshee here very shortly.
Yes,
are showing
a lot of people
up.
Ask.
Uh-huh. The real deal is showing up. So everything's at Livingston right now. Just needs shipped out to the Muskie Shop. They're checking them in here. Obviously, we'll go in whole hog when they come out. But it has been just such an answer to all kinds of issues that I've had. Where you hit these different streaks in this different seasonality. You know, it can't all be big all the time. And these two little, especially Menace and Critter, answer so many problems you have on the water. The far as like, oh, you need deep and small and all this fun stuff. So we'll get on that, but that'll be kind of the big funsy there. What else is going on here? Good stuff, man. I'm just flipping. There's so much cool stuff. It's nice, like we talked about previously, that you know, you get past, there's that bump in the road where there wasn't a lot of development, you know, and finally we're to the point of some cool stuff. And it'll be interesting to see what's coming out in the coming months, Jay. You know, I think there's going to be a lot more than we've had here. When did that violence, the Spanky Baits violence, when's that supposed to hit?
That's a new topwater from Spanky Baits that's coming out. We're going to have it by the end of February, according to the... Yeah. So we got a semi-exclusive on it, I guess, for a while. So that's cool.
Yeah.
Haven't seen it yet. Just seen images. I mean, it's right. So he's finishing them up. End of February is right around the corner. Maybe by the end of next week. So.
Oh, very cool.
Fingers crossed. There's not a ton of new stuff. I mean, Livingston's dominating in that category without question. You know. When we talked about last week or 2 weeks ago about that purchase of three of the larger.
Yeah.
You know, companies in the muskie fishing business, you know, with being Muskie Innovations, Chaos, and Muskie Mayhem. So one owner now. So we'll see how long it takes for them to develop new stuff. Because that guy's got a lot of work ahead of him, you know, managing these businesses and getting them running right. So,
we'll see. I think, I actually said it on the boat today to my client. I'm the first one to say it. I don't care. I think you're going to see a really good opportunity. Look, you're talking like Violent Strike, like Keith and all these other guys, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is a very interesting time on the business front, to be honest with you. And I don't know if you're into that kind of stuff, but I find it to be probably the most transformative period in modern muskie fishing as far as what's taking place from a business standpoint, obviously. You have, you know, that merger. You have Joe Booker's got a new partner where it looks like Joe Booker, their model, I believe, and from the horse's mouth, what he told me, he's going like smaller batch, right? And then you go to that new company, which it'll be interesting. With, you know, I'll tell you my take, and it doesn't matter. And I hope the guy succeeds. He needs to succeed for the sake of everybody. But you know, it'd be pretty hard to focus on new stuff. That's a lot to deal with. You know, you've got a lot of production to deal with there. You know, if you look at that model, and I'll just tell you flat out. So you've got some really flagship baits, which is Bulldog, Medusa, Cowgirl, and Showgirl that you have to deliver. You have Swimming Dog and Poseidon that are just as important, right, in the modern spectrum that you have to deliver. Yeah. So you have a lot of product fulfillment, a lot of production that needs to be done. So I would say that development of new products is probably not something that is going to be, if it was my operation, that's probably a afterthought at this point, which if you're a basement builder or a small maker, it's a heck of an opportunity. It's a heck of an opportunity.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, Keith. When Keith dropped off the stuff, he's working on a new topwater, and he had some prototypes. So, I mean, there you go.
Yeah.
You know, he's putting that together.
It's pretty
different.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. If it's a different landscape, we don't know what the landscape is yet, but it's different. And different's not bad. Different is different. But, you know, if I think it's going to really open up some possibilities there. But, yeah, Livingston, you said it, so I'll say it. I mean, you've got Critter, you got Banshee, you got Menace, right? So you got two rubber baits and a suspending. Again, Jay said it the last time. Banshee, don't sleep on Banshee. Thanks.
I like that little thing. I know,
son
man.
Son of a bitch. But I did it. Just forget about it. There's another way to put it. That's kind of a bad little dude. But right behind it, and I've got the Protos, we have bigger versions. I have, folks, prepare yourself for this little tease here.
I'm sitting down.
Mustang Max, a 9.5 inch Mustang. I have them.
I have not seen it yet. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep. I mean, I heard about it a little bit, but okay.
Got them. So I've been testing that guy, which is a 9.5 inch Mustang. What's cool, and what I did, just talk baits and cool things that are on the horizon here. So you've got Magnus, right? And my swim bait game plan is I tried to be comprehensive in the development of these baits, because even the people at Livingston said, why are you doing two different kind of vibe swim baits, right? So you have Magnus, which is its own animal with a hard head and replaceable tail, and then you have Mustang. Mustang is the shallower variation. Right now, Magnus without the weight in it will run shallow, but you've got 7, 8, 9, and 10 now. So the Mustang is 7 and change, right? Then you have the 8-inch Magnus, then you have the 9-inch Mustang, now you have the 10-inch Magnus, right? So it's 7, 8, 9, and 10. But realistically, and like my buddy Mike Lowe, a really good friend of mine, fished together a lot. He's tested Magnuses. A lot of people have had a lot of good success on the 8-inch, right? So for like those deeper applications, the Magnus is where I'm going, right? And then your Mustang for your shallower applications-ish. But yeah, the 9.5 is just ripping cool. Worked exactly like you expect it. And I hope I'll get the prototypes here in my hand. 5. There should be a Mustang 5 probably by the end of the year, which is going to be a killer, which you need downsize. So if you just take your Mustang and blow it up to 9.5, that's what you got. Same action. So we should probably have a 5-inch Mustang developed and ready to go by the end of the year.
What do you think that thing will weigh at?
I don't know. Scale.
Okay.
So the thing is, the cool thing is, once you get the design done, scalability, the way we're doing it, is everything changes with length, so it'll have the same running properties, right? So you'll get the same running depth and things of that nature as your Mustang. So hopefully have a 5 for like an early season or a throwback thing, working on that. But yeah, as far as, like you said, I mean, we're, as far as cool new stuff coming out, it's kind of endless. We've got Critter Max and then Mega Menace, so that's a whole other animal, and a couple other things. Jay's not even seen this. So the Big Mac 2.0, previously I'd worked with with Herbie and the team over there. I said, no, I'm done. Done. I'm doing it my way. So there's a run of Big Macs that are, how do I put the paint? I don't know how to explain the paint. They're what I wanted, right? With, and they also have a heavier duty or heavy duty wire. So it's about super overbuilt Big Macs, like a redesign. I kind of overhauled it, said I'm keeping the ideas that I liked before, keeping the overall shape, and did a few different things there with some like exceptionally cool paint job. So there's plenty of cool stuff on the horizon, you know, which is going to be interesting to see. But yeah, don't worry. There's big rubber coming down the pike, Jaybird. Mm-hmm. It's a coming.
It's cool.
Chug-a-lug-a. It's cool. I know. I'll have to show you at some point the actually, I think I showed you a couple of them. Don't say what they are, but those paint. Remember I was painting about 6 months ago?
Yeah. Are you going to do it?
Oh, they're done. Yeah. They're
okay.
On. I'll tease. People are like, oh, come on. No, hold on. Jay, let me find this.
Huh.
Hold on. Check this out. These are done. Don't look at these. You can tease, but don't say what they are. And do not share those with anybody. I'll kill you. If you think there's a cooler freaking paint job than either of those two. Yeah, buddy. You get it?
Getting it now.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Yeah. That is, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Sorry, folks.
Wow.
I've been busy all day. I haven't talked to Jay. The one on the bottom, is that not the best version of that kind of you've ever?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's the best.
It is.
It's the best ever done. Yes. Thank
you. Well,
you
know the one on the top's right up my alley. You know that. So
that's going to be, guys,
then
I'm
excited.
I know. I'm super, whatever. I can't even tease those yet. But whole new concept in how paint jobs are done, which is a whole other animal. I'll tell you all how we accomplished it, Jay, later. But yeah, that's I'm stoked on that. So there's the Big Mac step, like I said. Hopefully, I mean, I was trying to talk about the overall market, but hopefully, you know, there's some still new cool development. And like I said, if you got a bait rubbing around in the back of your head, now's the time. Go crazy. You know, there's opportunity abounding. Change is good. There's nothing wrong with it. Let's get to some Q&A. What do you say, Jay? Are you ready to lock in? Are you ready to get dialed in on the Q's or the A's?
Sounds like a plan.
Anyway, Brock. Hi, Steve and Jay. The water I fish in Wisconsin Rapids is usually rivers and one lake with a fairly low density. I fish 2 to 3 days a week after work and usually one full day after their weekend, struggling to get both follows and fish in the boat. My successful year was last year with 4 boated and 5 more follows after 6 years of musky fishing. I very much struggle to pattern fish with a typical day of being 2 to 3 hours. I typically base it on seasonality and weather. How would you go about putting a pattern together with limited time, not seeing any fish in a week's time? He said maybe he's getting follows and he doesn't know for a deep fish and live scope, and he's got super tannic water. That's just everybody's plight. If you're not on the water every day, you're patterning, and I like the premise, right? So that's normal. You're getting off work, you got these longer summer days, you got 2 or 3 hours to go make it happen, right? We got 2 or 3 hours,
and it's a good time of the day too,
right?
If you're getting off work, I'm assuming it's, you know, dinner time or something like
now,
that, so you're fishing low light period, which mm-hmm. is good.
What I find it's a concept I've tried to browbeat in the past, and at times, and I've written a little bit about it, which is theoretical patterning. Okay? So let's say you're working and you're a normal human being, and there's nothing wrong with that, and you want to go fishing after work. You have the weather app. Hell, you got a weather thing on the Muskie 360 app now, and you've got your weather channels, and you've got whatever. Dial into whatever that horrible TV channel Jay watches there. You'll get the weather. You'll have to sift through some bullshit, but you'll get the weather. Eventually, they'll spit it out poorly, right? They seem to on your morning show, Jay. we're painting. Oh, a Molsoning couple paints rocks for the elderly. Next on News Channel 4. Friggin' Jesus. What's wrong with these folks? But nonetheless.
Hey, don't knock it. You know, Tom at work, he just got a rock tumbler.
moving on before.
Yeah. I'm serious.
White guy hobbies on this episode.
He was selling something. Yeah. A guy comes over to look at something he was selling on Facebook or something, like, you know, farm equipment.
Right.
And the guy said, I'll tell you what, man, I was scared. I came in here. I thought you had a meth lab going. I saw the rock things. I didn't know what they were.
On this episode of White Guy Hobbies.
Poor Tom.
Oh, I'm going to start tumbling gemstones.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Go build a train in your mom's basement.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Just down here making my own ham radio. This happens to the best of us, you know? But anyway, theoretical patterning. So, and this is what I'll do when I'm traveling to a destination too. You have the weather data. You have wind direction, right? Which is a strong indication. And we can also look at the frontal movements. So, let's say you're fishing Friday and it's Monday. You can look at where you're at based upon the weather. So, we have general seasonality. And he said he's looking at weather and seasonality. So, we have general rules of seasonality, right? Simply put, they are shallow in the spring. They are shallow in the fall. They are highly scattered in the summer, and they're deep in the winter, right? We just keep it that baseline for now. We could really, but those are, are broad brushstrokes. Well, if we have relative seasonality in mind, right, and we have the weather forecast, and we have wind, we can start to theoretically pattern in our mind before we're there, okay? So let's say it's spring in the north. This is an easy one, but it's early season. Muskies are post-spawn. Well, where did they spawn? They spawned, in flats, okay? I can do that on my map on my lunch break, or I can do it. You're sitting there with your wife, and she's watching Three's Company reruns or whatever the heck women do, right? She's watching that, mm-hmm. and you can look on your phone. Heck, look on the Muskie 360 app. This is why I put mapping on there. Look at the satellite. Okay, find some shallower looking stuff or do your homework and you go, okay, it's early season. Flats. Okay, the north end of a lake warms up faster than the south end. So we're looking for warm. And now then what's the weather? Right? So today, on Monday, you know, it's X, Y, and Z. And then on Tuesday, it's X, Y, and Z. And predict what the change would be. Right? Now, that takes some baseline knowledge. Jay and I have been pounding it to you for years, which is, well, let's say we're starting with that spring pattern. And we are in gross general seasonality. We believe that muskies should be on the north end of a body of water post-spawn pattern. Okay. That general seasonality tells us that they should be in sub 15 feet of water on the north side of a lake. Would that be a gross generality, Jay?
Sure.
Okay, yeah. Check. We know that. And we're looking at our weather, and we've decided it's Monday. We're going to fish Friday. We know that that is the general pattern. And we see a hellacious cold front hitting Wednesday. Right? 25-degree temperature drop. Well, on Wednesday, what will happen? Muskies will react to their environment. That is no doubt. Okay? There's no doubt that that is going to take place. So on Wednesday, there should be a slowage of activity, and muskies that we believe are in that zone will drop back to the comfort and safety of slightly deeper water. They'll probably be on the extreme edge of that 15 feet. And let's say that cold front doesn't recover that much on Thursday. It recovers a little bit, and we still have a lack of humidity. And Friday is the first day of recovery. What are you going to do? Are you going to start your day beating the shallows with a RJ's bucktail, burning the shit out of it in the shallows? Or are you going to go, this is what happened throughout the week before I got here. Muskies didn't stop doing what muskies do because I was at work. Where are they at, and what stage of recovery from a cold front are they in? Or what stage, based on the weather that took place before I showed up, where are they at? because where people waste time is wanting it to be the way they want it to be. Right? You get your Friday night and you want to, you're shitting, you're just crapping your pants to catch one on top water. Muskies don't care. They're staged where they need to be. So we need to look at the days leading up to when we're going to be on the water. Look at what the reality is setting up for when we arrive. Because you can spend far less time beating the shallows that will be completely fruitless and go out and go, you know what? The rules say seasoning, patterning, current weather things tell me that they should be in X, Y, and Z zone. That is where I will start. Because you're starting way closer than where everybody else starts. Everybody else starts and they start beating the weeds or they start beating the edges and they don't get a follow on double tens. And they scratch their head and say they're not biting. Right? They didn't crawl up into the woods. So start with a realistic evaluation of the conditions. But don't do it the day you show up. Look at the week. Right? You got to look at cycles. And where do you show up inside that cycle? The muskies are doing what muskies do. You showed up and interrupted the party. And you've got to look at, and I've seen guys do it so often. They come to their trip to Canada, they're going to the Northwoods, or they go somewhere, and they show up and they go, I'm here, figure it out. Freaking dude, you got time in the car, figure it out. Conceptualize what's taking place, conceptualize what would have, and some people got that, some people don't, but man, there's gross general rules that'll keep you from wasting time. Right? And that's the best thing I think you can do when you're fishing a body of water and you don't have a tremendous amount of time is do the mental homework, which is as good as on the water observations once you have a general game plan, right? So let's say we've done the thought process and I'm showing up to a lake in Minnesota, right? Random Minnesota lake, and I've had sustained winds and I've got X, Y, and Z conditions. Well, I can look at seasonality. I can look at in the moment weather and water conditions and then what that cycle has been and narrow the field of search tremendously real quick, right? Because there's enough knowledge out there and there's enough shared knowledge and you know, okay, what does muskies do in the summer? Deep outside weeds, rocks, reefs, blah, blah, blah. It's all out there for you to kind of pre-plan. That's what I would be looking to do to get in front of more fish. And that eliminates that wasted effort that is completely out of the wheelhouse, right? It's like, imagine you're on this like cold front bite. We're using slow glide baits and a deep edge. And here comes a boat raging up and he just shows up on the edge beating topwaters and bucktails. He's just completely out of the freaking conversation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I've watched it as a guide a million times, like, okay, I've scored the last 3 days vertical jigging and here goes a boat and he's just ripping rubber like his hair's on fire. Either he knows something I don't know or this guy just showed up and that's what he wants to happen. Right? And if blind squirrel finds nut, that's fine. But studying the week leading up or paying attention to those things is because you can't always be on the water. Those context clues are still there. Right? The same things that you would observe on the, you might not be able to observe water clarity. You can't observe the direct impact on the body of water at that very moment. Right? As far as like, okay, is there any kind of like I said, water clarity change? What is the impact? But, you know, if the weather forecast says it's blowing 15, well, it might be blowing 10 to 20, but you can at least go, okay, this is the general impact. And like I said, it'll really help you get your brain together. And that, like I said, probably the strongest mental exercise in muskie fishing is pre-patterning mentally leading up to a trip. And then getting on the water, doing your three-point bait check that you compare against your mental homework.
There you go. Yeah.
Right? So we have theoretical patterning. Yeah. What is going to happen? What has been happening? Then we confirm or deny that with a three-point bait check. That's it. And then you go, well, I was wrong or I was right. And now you are, bam, you're in the game. you're in the game way faster than taking 2 days to figure it out.
Well, for sure.
Man, yeah. and
simply, you know, observing weather trends. Yeah, yeah.
Weather trends.
A little bit of homework. Yeah, you can dial it.
Which is deeper thought, though. That, you know, the deep thought of, okay, what does this look like? I beat the crap out of it in next level musky fishing in reading the water. And that's what I'm getting. This is reading the water without being there. That's it. Right? I can't tell you exactly where they're at, but I can tell you in general where they're at. And I can tell you in general what their demeanor is or their activity level is based upon the cycle of weather patterns. Sometimes you show up and you're completely wrong. But if we're going for gross generalities and narrowing our scope of search, it's highly effective. You can just knock out so many possibilities. Anyway, moving on. David, Steve J. Steve, I know you like technology, I guess. How do you know that? I've never said that. So he says, I know you like technology. How do you think AI and developing technology will change musky fishing in the next 5 to 10 years? Thanks for the great updates to the app. Love the moon and weather features, and everything else is going to be really usable for the 2026 season. Thanks for updating our sport. Well, cool. Thank you. That's a great compliment. There's some cool stuff in there. But how do you think AI and technology will change musky fishing in the next 5 years? Pretty much listen to everything I just said. That'll be in a box before too long. That's a project I'm actually working on with Livingston, to be honest with you. Putting on my Jay, remember on Johnny Carson, he was Carmack the Magnificent, and he'd have the envelope and hold it up to his head.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Trying to, you know, predict the future, predict the answer. Mm-hmm. Here's what I think's going to happen. Mark my words. So, and somebody's a fool if they don't do this. The biggest struggle that I have developing stuff for the app, let me take a drink. The biggest factor that I have in having a AI model that can answer your questions on the water, just like we're doing here in the podcast, right? It can be done. Right. There is Livingston Lures has an app that I built for them to help with the bass stuff. And there's a feature on there called Captain Livingston J. I don't even know if you
ever seen it. You mention that, because I'm working on an app that's called What Would Jay Do?
What would Jay do?
All you do is you ask questions, you know, you plug it in there, and then Jay, you know, answers, and he's got a little, you know, bobblehead going and everything. Pretty cool. Go ahead, Steve. Sorry.
But so I developed an AI agent called Captain Livingston for Livingston, which is general fishing questions. Now, it's based on gross general seasonality, right? Gross rules. What's going to happen? Here's mark my words. Either I'll do it or somebody else will do it. You're going to have an AI agent that knows everything that I've done. So you could take every podcast that I've listened to, every article I've written, Next Level Musky Fishing in the next book, and then any shred of stuff, and you can start seeing a lot of it might not seem linear, but I have a linear thought process about muskies. You could train an AI agent. Now, what I think is going to happen, that's going to be integrated into your fish finder. And that is what I think will happen in the next 5 to 10 years. And it's stupid if it doesn't. Is you should be able to have an AI agent that works via, you know, whatever, Starlink or your cell service, that is going to have the data. Because the biggest thing with Captain Livingston or the other AI agents I've worked on is I don't have your in-the-moment data. I don't have that. I don't have your water temperature. I can get your weather, but the biggest thing is you can't get that water read because there's very little data. There's things called, not to bore you to death, but there's a thing called an API I've mentioned on the podcast before, which is like how we get weather data. There's not a lot of fresh water data, right?
You don't have, once the thing's plugged into a locator, though, it's once game over.
Now it's just got everything, which is I have bait fish staging, because right now I know for a fact you can identify species, right? You can identify a muskie via the density of its swim bladder on down scan. That's a whole other animal. But you can identify species. So now I could go, if you have enough data coming to a thought engine, if you will, that it can't make the cast for you, but can do everything you need to do. I think that's what's going to happen. Which is, why would you need a guide ever again? You see what I'm saying? Is a certain point, they will tie. It's been done. I love this question. Sorry, I'm just thinking. Because it's been done on a few different things where like you have like these apps like Fishbrain and FishItty, where it's collective information, right? Muskie 360 is not this way. We're not logging all that stuff. But these other apps will, like, you'll have X, Y, and Z. Like, say you got 10,000 users and it logs, okay, did they catch a fish or not? You could start seeing patterns. And if there was an AI agent, AI tech in your fish finder, it wouldn't take very long to have artificial intelligence patterning fish. Not long at all.
Because
I can, hell, I can do it. Like I said, it's funny because it's like what we were just talking about, freaking theoretical patterning. It's literally that in a box. It could be done. If I had your water temperature, water temp, I need weather. The hardest thing's to get you on the minute water temp. So you got water temp, weather, in the moment, wind, weather, cloud cover, you know, because you've got Steve's power hour, which is predictive weather. I mean, it pretty much could ebb and flow that way, much less with species identification on your down scan to know, okay, boom, those are perch, those are this, those are that. I can do that on my stuff. Doesn't take a freaking genius to program that. That's where I think it'll end up going. And it's scary, not my favorite thing, but that's just the reality of where I think it'll go, is you will have either in your hand in your iPhone or whatever device, or probably your fish finder, because you can get that on the water data, which is not, you know, nope. It doesn't make any sense to have enough infrastructure to have the water temperature on Squirrel Lake. You know what I'm saying? There's not a weather beacon out there for it. But if you launch your boat and you go, boom, it knows where you're at. It knows what month it is. It knows all that stuff. Taking those factors in consideration, it'd probably be pretty scary good, because guiding is just a lot. It's like a lot of the stuff I'm working on the next book, which guiding is just logic. I'm guiding you through a logical process of elimination. If you think about it, right? To guide someone is to lead them in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
I'm taking you to where the fish are. I mean, I'm just thinking out loud, which is like, if you distill that, where are they at? And then the question becomes, where are they hitting, right? Well, if seasonality dictates staging and proximity is most important, then it narrows the field pretty quick. So that's where I think it'll go. I don't like it, like I said. You know, what's going to happen, Jay? People might just come and rent fish finders and rods. I need my guide in a box. But yeah, I mean... Somebody gave me the budget, I could do it. You could have a logic engine. I could build a logic engine for Joe Bucher that would guide you like Joe Bucher would guide you. Like, not obviously the same joke, but you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It could be done. Everybody has their own thought process. Once you get down to the thought process and the core of their line of thinking, then it's all the same. Man, sorry. It'll suck. That's what I think will happen in 5 to 10 years. You'll just turn on your live scope and it'll just go net them for you. What do you think, Jay? What do you think will happen?
Well, I tend to agree. I mean, it's just all a matter of inputting the right stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Like you said about Joe Bucher, it's just like, okay. You tell your AI agent to, you know, draw from this, that, and the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
These 110 videos and
yeah,
these 45 articles and, mm-hmm, you know, these podcasts he was on, and
yep,
it's all right there and they can do it. And then it's just like, okay, there's a ton of information there.
There's the
plug that
process
into a mm-hmm locator that's always, you know, in 5 years or way less. I mean, the way locators less will all have weather stations built in, and yeah, all this stuff is just all, it's all integrated.
Yeah, I think this.
Why not? I think it'll be easy. I think it'll be easy in 5 years.
Oh, freaking.
For them to perform this and manufacture it and put it out and have it reasonably priced.
I could do it. Yeah, I could do it now. You would just need the connect. You could, I mean, hell. My Garmin's will tether, but I mean, you just need, you can get boat or internet on your boat. It could be done now. It could easily be done now, which is that we're probably, but that thought is probably almost a tick behind. Fish finder companies are not that cutting edge, but I mean, it's, that's what's going to happen, which is cool. I mean, like I said, it eliminates, I mean, how would that, I mean, God, I'm spinning. I love spinning my brain here. I'm going, how would that work? But I mean, if you go, say I put Steve Herbeck in a box and I mailed him to the desert, like Nermal from the Garf, I'm teasing. But if you had all of Steve Herbeck's waypoints, all of Steve Herbeck's anecdotal knowledge and I mean, you could do it, which is dystopian hellscape, but it can be done. So, whatever. Moving on. Sorry. I forgot we were doing a muskie podcast. I'm down the rabbit hole. Scott, my wife is struggling with her bait cast reels. I believe I've heard you guys talk about a reel that's harder to bird nest. Okay, so cut to, he goes on and on and on. It is the Swivelo Genesis. Jay, do we have any of those right now?
We got some in the other day, including that bass reel, but... Actually, I did not see how many we got in. It came in after I left or something. I think we're good on all models though. Okay. on the Genesis. They were kind of sold out for a while because we import them from Europe, so it took a while.
Yeah, it's those are made by a good pal of mine. He'll keep them in stock for us. Like I said, it's the only place you can get them, the Muskie Shop. But last year we did a video on this. You can see a video on the YouTube, on Muskie Shop TV, on the YouTube channel of that. I mean, I have them. I've thrown them. Jay, actually, you still have the tester rod, I believe, at the shop. I mean, you can't bird's nest them. You just can't. They're so helpful for
wives. It's true.
You could take your wife. You could take your girlfriend. You could take your wife and your girlfriend out at one time, and they're not going to bird's nest.
Taking dozens of people out the parking lot, dozens, of all age groups,
behind the woodshed, abilities. Might say.
They're firing baits, and everyone's got the same, you know, wow. Yeah. That thing's for real. Okay, pretty cool.
It does it for real, and it just eliminates. I mean, I've said it before. Great reel. I'm not gonna fish with it 24/7. It does its job for people that need help in that department. It's the real deal. So. All right, Greg, throughout the year, you probably see this more and more often than I do. I see muskies pop out and do like a 10-yard, 90-degree sprint, hit, turn, and leave from the inside of the littoral zone. So this is going to be scope. Okay. He said, on the outside, when they do it, they never turn and leave. It seems that they hang on longer, and you get hooks in those fish. And he thought, okay, from the inside. One more time from the inside. And leave, it seems. Okay, he's talking about how fish are coming in and hit and different hookups, and you get hooks in the fish. Any thought?
How they approach the bait from different angles? Okay.
To me, it's if you're seeing that fish visually or you're seeing it on scope, I don't really have... I mean, it's a mechanics thing. They shouldn't... It's not a hang on longer. And that's one thing about strikes. I've talked about it before, but it's worth noting, is the differentiator between all the guys that I know that are like pro muskie anglers. They have really good reflexes, and I mean fast twitch muscles. It's the one, that's the only physical difference I know. Everybody's got the same reels, everybody's got a decent boat, everybody's got decent baits. When the opportunity comes, they don't miss. So you shouldn't need them to hang on to get hooks in them. They touch it, you should light them up, right? And everybody has different reflexes. I've seen, and especially guiding, I've seen strikes where you go, oh my goodness, that took you literally a second and a half to react, right? Which is, how did, it's the same thing of, it's like, you know, watching somebody wreck in slow motion. Hit your brakes. React. That's just a physical aspect. I don't know how to train that. I don't know how to change that. Right? But it's worth noting. I mean, if you seem like you're missing a lot of fish, it can be your reaction time. And that's one of the joys of having video on the boat. I've watched clients just get rocked and they get, I see the rod go and it's like, bam, take a beat, bam, the hook's, that's way too late. Right? I can't really recall too often that I felt the hook or felt the bite, if that makes any sense. Where by the time he's engaged, I'll feel the follow through on the fish, but I know before it, I don't need him to take the whole freaking bait. I know that fish is on that bait. Does that make sense? Like the minute that thing changes, I don't go, is that a weed? Is that a stick? Is like, I feel, I react. I don't think about, and it's, again, that's why I don't know how to train it. I don't think about hook sets. Now, I think about my mechanics of my hook sets, but I don't ever have the time to go, I should set the hook. Right? And I don't know if that's trainable. I just know that's how I am fishing with a lot of these other guys, Herbie, Booker, Danny. I see it where you're mid-conversation, you're talking, bam, and they just set the hook. It's not a thought process. It's a reaction. And I would say if you're having fish come up and you're having problems getting hooks onto them or they need to hang on longer, it's a reaction time thing. I'm not a freaking boxing instructor. I don't know how to get your freaking reaction time up higher. But what I could tell you is this, if I knew I was missing fish because they hit and then I set the hook and nobody was home, I'm going to focus on two things, power and mechanics. Right? There's the two things we can definitely control. We control how powerful our hook sets are, and they need to be powerful. Right? None of this trout set lifting the rod crap. None of this bass hook set. You got to swing the bat to the side and swing it hard. Right? First and foremost, watch videos. Right? Just absolutely watch videos. The other thing in that mechanics thing that I've noticed that I innately do, and this is a cool thing that I noticed watching video clips, is when I'm setting, I'm picking up slack too, and I didn't even know I was doing it. I'm setting and turning at the same time. And that is alleviating any slack line that fish generates on the strike. That's just a knee-jerk reaction. Didn't even really know I'd do it. Because, I mean, you think about a strike, Jay. What is it? I mean, half a second? How fast is this happening? You know, it's like, bam, that's it. I know that, like, when I set, I kind of turn the handle. I don't know why, but I do. But from observing myself on video, it's been like, okay, cool, that works. If you're struggling in that department, think about that. Don't overthink it when it actually happens, but I would be practicing hook sets. Because if your body doesn't know what it's going to do, you're not going to react quickly. Right? That's the only way I know, like, again, I don't know how to train reaction speed, but I know how to train mechanics. And the more that you do something, the more fluid it becomes and the more knee-jerk it becomes. Right? So your body knows what to do before you can think about doing it. Therefore, the mechanics are fluid. If you don't know how to set the hook or you really don't have a lot of hook sets under your belt or you're not setting with any consistency one time, I've seen guys like, oh, they're trying to set left, they're trying to set right, they're trying to, all the, if you don't like make up your mind and tell your brain, this is how we set the hook on a muskie, and you figure those mechanics out, your brain's not going to know what to do in a split second, and you're fumbling and bumbling, right? So is it hardened to the side and then lift the rod for control, which is what I do, I'm up and over, or over and up, figure it out, and then run it through your brain. Run it physically on the boat. Practice it on the water with or without a bait. I don't care. And then go through it in your mind. Train your brain. This is my hook set, and this is what you will do when you need to do it. Because you don't have time to think about what you're doing. You have to do it. Mm-hmm. Right? You just got to do. But like I said, yeah. Go ahead.
You said you were reeling in. You noticed you were reeling before sometimes, or reeling before you set the hook.
When the rod's going back, I actually didn't even notice until recently. I was flipping through. Actually, I was sending you stuff for Critter and Menace, and I was like, "What?" Right? And we got tons of hook sets on. But I actually do one pickup 99% of the time. I reel the handle one time during the hook set, and I was like, "I didn't even know I did that," but I just do.
I think that's part of being dialed in is that what you're doing is that's part of the mechanics is that you're making sure slack line's eliminated before you. Yeah. It just becomes more efficient because you reel up to the slack line, bam, and then the rod goes to the right and it's setting the hook. Right. Boom. Game over. Got him.
Right. Which is, again, if you're missing fish and you're struggling with that, the only thing I know to do is you got to do that work on your own. Watch videos.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get on YouTube and watch. I have comments about, I don't care what channel it is. There's some of this stuff, this squatting down like I'm a machine gunner stance and trying to land, forget all that mess. Watch some of the classics. Watch some of the legends set the hook, right? Watch that and watch the mechanics. I mean, so much of this, and it's a tip of the hat to the next book, which we're down rabbit holes that my brain's in right now. But this was, I say it and I'll give away kind of a thought that I've been having of late, but this is this. Once you have a boat and you have a musky rod and you have 12, 15, 20 baits, we're all even, right? Thought process and mechanics. Thought process is number one. And then can you physically execute? And that's the thing is like, it's a chess match with a physical aspect, right? And a lot of guys are really good at the mental game and they can nerd you to death on it. And muskies do this and this is where they should be. And this is, you know, sounds like my shit. Oh, theoretical patterning, right? But they can't back it up on the physical action. So they don't, and it's kind of like this balance of like, make sure you might know all the theory and you might know all the patterns and you might not might be able to answer all the questions and you might know all the cover and structure types. Jay, there's guys that I've met now that we've pounded on stuff and they can tell me every piece of forage and every lake they fish and naming the weeds, right? And that's hydrilla gorilla and this is blah, blah, blah. You got the nerd part down. Cool. You have the nerd part down. A lot of people don't want to do the nerd part, but do you have the physical part down? So it's kind of like both. It's 90% mental, but that 10% physical is just as important, right? Which is making sure that you have your physical mechanics down, making sure that you are delivering powerful hook sets and all this stuff. So that's just something to consider. But yeah, I mean, if you're missing a bunch of fish, you have different angles, work on that. That it shouldn't matter that much. I'm down the rabbit hole as always. Andrew, I'm looking at completing my small tackle box and just wondering what lures you would recommend. So far, I have a Musky Frenzy IC9 bucktail and a walleye collar. I have a regular Medusa and a perch, a Savage Gear 12-inch line through pike, a Bass Pro glide bait. Any recommendations for the last four spots in my tackle bag? So let's look at this. We have an IC9.
Big baits.
There's your big baits. Yeah, he's got an IC9 covering his bucktail there. Regular Medusa again. So it's the line through and the glide. So we have a bucktail. We have a jerk bait. We have a glide bait. Four spots. So Jay's knee-jerk reaction there was true. So if I got four spots in that tackle box, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to add. Jay, you throw them in here as we go. But here's what I'm thinking. First and foremost, what I think you're missing in that tackle collection is a spinnerbait. Now, if I have a limited, he's young man putting together a small tackle box here, and I've got limited slots, four more baits, spinnerbait's going in there. With the caveat that you can get some handful of extra blades. Get yourself a Steve's meat grinder or an Ace Bait, or I don't care what brand it is, really. Just get something like the moderate size. Don't get like a heavy one. So whether it be like I said, Ace Bait, Grim Reaper, something you can change
Rad
the blades.
Dog, yeah.
Rad Dog, right. Whatever. Don't get the heavy versions, but your ounce and a half, whatever. Get a spinner bait because that is maximum versatility, right?
So a spinner, like you said, you can change the blades right. You can change the blades out quickly. And they make it a totally different presentation.
It can be a vertical jig. It can be a pull pause bait. It can be straight retrieve. You can do a lot with a spinner bait. That's got to happen. Get you a black spinner, get a black skirted spinner bait and spend the extra $1.50 and get a willow leaf, a Colorado, an Indiana, maybe a French, and you got that down. Because let's say you have a little French bladed spinner bait, you can do some of the stuff that a guy might do with a Meps Giant Killer, or you can do some different things there. So that's going to be a prerequisite, period. Three more spots. You're missing diving rise, you're missing tubes. I think most importantly in that setup, he's missing a crank.
Yeah, a little twitch bait, crank bait. Yeah.
Slammer.
Yeah.
Slammer. The if I'm limited to those four spots, I'm going slammer. I'm not going to go fatty.
7-inch minnow.
Just a 7-inch, yeah. Just the 7-inch slammer regular minnow. He has a fatty minnow, which is a round body, but you could use that twitch. We're missing diving rise. We're missing swim baits, which would be, he's got a glide bait, but he has the 12-inch pike through, which is a little heavy duty. I would say that if you have to, I would get a Titan or a Suic, or I'd get a Mustang.
Yeah, for sure.
So diving rise is such an integral part of musky fishing. You know, because in that, he doesn't have a topwater in there, right? And you go, well, what, not a topwater? You can frickin' put a Colorado blade on that spinner bait and bulge it and get the same strokes you get with a fat bastard. You can put, take a frickin' Steve's meat grinder and put a single tin on it. You know what I'm saying? You're going to be, whoa, that's up there.
If I was assembling seven primary baits, right, the topwater would not be
not
in the discussion.
One of, because you can
just
do
not with me.
But I say like throwing a Titan in the mix or whatever. But for the diving rise thing, you can pick up a lot of those fish that are high in the water column if you're doing a shallow run and high float back, right? So you're going to be able to be probative with that bait and really getting some thick cover and fish some stuff you're not. I would say out of those four, though, of everything, the most important thing you could add to that entire thing is the spinnerbait, period. It's a whole other topic, but if I were, you know, if I'm taking somebody like that's new to musky fishing or not very experienced, I pound that, and it's the most important tool in your game. Like, I could probably, I don't want to do it, but I bet you I could fish all year long with a spinnerbait. If I'm allowed to have extra weight and I can change the blades, I could fish 12 months out of the year with a spinnerbait. Easy. You know, there's so much you can do. You can take a freaking safety pin spinnerbait and put a paddle tail on the back. Get you a big paddle tail like a Steve's Power Paddle or a freaking Storm Grub or a Lunker City. Now you have a swim bait. Right? You have a pseudo topwater. You can bulge with them. There's just a litany of things you can do. Back in the day, before we had Krakens and tubes, I used to catch a ton of muskies yo-yoing spinnerbaits. Pull it, let it fall. Pull it, let it fall. Right? There's a tremendous amount of things you can do with that. So that my man, would be first and foremost. Anything else you think that we covered the four, or any of you would be like, gotta have? Anything else, Jay? He needs.
Yeah, well,
a headlock.
Okay. I mean, you could always have another jerk bait. You could always duplicate and just get another version of something too. You know, you don't have a deep diving crankbait in there, which are extremely versatile. You know, like a straight depth rater.
Yeah.
It's a jerk bait. It's more probative than a really shallow one, but it's not restricted to only fishing deep by any means.
Yeah. You know, there's so many. That's why we have a billion baits, and they all do a bit. And, you know, I mean, it's kind of interesting. I love those conversations at times because I told a guy earlier in the week, and nice dude. He's very enthusiastic about musky fishing. And I just told him he just bought some more baits. And I said, do you feel like you have enough? And he really loves the bait aspect of musky fishing. And I said, cool. I said, I would recommend that you stop buying baits and focus your energy on learning the craft. Right? And there's a certain point where you've got to admit, and this guy needs baits, but a lot of us don't need baits. A lot of us definitely don't need baits. But there's a certain point where one hits the edge of enlightenment, I guess, and you go, well, no matter how many baits I buy, you can't buy a muskie. You can't buy a bait and guarantee a fish, but understanding seasonality, patterning, reading the water, you know, all these different elements, mental things, that gets you far more fish, right? Because people have always caught muskies long before any of this crap existed and long after, right? You know, it's kind of like our place in time. And you go, well, we're talking about this AI crap. I mean, I bet you 90% of the baits that we think are, they're just awesome right now will not be around in 20 years. And it'll be next, but the game will be the same. It'll be just a different iteration. It'd be a different tool. You know, tools always evolve. Muskies stopped evolving long ago, right? And at a certain point, you've got to stop. You'll hit this impasse where there's just those guys that they just keep buying baits and they're not catching fish. And you go, it ain't the baits, bud. You know, you can't just, you don't, and that's what people fall for is that if I buy that bait, it's going to change my game. It's going to change everything. It won't. You know, if you don't know how to find them, that bait ain't going to do it. And Nope. And you got to look at it through that lens too. If you're on the, hey, that guy needs 12 baits. You know, if you got 1,200, you know, maybe it's time to study the craft. Jason, I'm finally starting to see what you mean about bucktails. All my boat partners refuse to use anything else and will throw them all day long. How do I get them to work with me using complementary lures? I feel like every time I want to fish deep edges or I want to fish something that doesn't feel like bucktail water, they get grumpy. They complain that they can't hit the weeds. Any advice? Man, dang. Now we're getting towards it. I mean, that's the funny truth. That, well, you know what? It reminds me of a conversation I had with Al Frost years ago. He was like, I hate guiding people when it's a bite on deep edges because they don't know what the heck we're throwing at and it weirds them out.
Yeah. Well, Doug Smith, guide at the shop, has said the same stuff. One of my favorite Doug Smith quotes of all time is, I think, how'd it go yesterday? You know, and he's like, well, you know, we're fishing, we had to fish deep, you know, and it's just like, you know, he's trying to explain the moment you get away from the weeds, they get nervous.
I know.
And they don't understand. Yeah, there's no target for them, you know, so it's understandable, you know, if you don't have a lot of experience.
Oh, it drives define a lot of experience. That's a whole other podcast in and of itself, which is I'll end up with the guy, I've been musky fishing 52 years. And
right,
it's like,
right,
shut
right.
up. Right? Yeah, we're going to fish the freaking 9 casts off the bank. That's where they're at. How deep are we? It doesn't matter. How deep are we? Shut up. How deep are we? I mean, sorry, I'm venting now. I just caught myself. It's like the game all the time of just throw, you know, just throw it out there and you'll go. That's structure. Like, yeah, I know immediately when it's that and to Jason's question, your boat partners are unenlightened as to the importance of other edges, right? And so it becomes your job. How do you get them to throw something else and be complimentary? Now think about this, which is you've got these cavemen that want me throw bucktail, me catch fish, right? So you're guiding cavemen and you're wanting to freaking show them how to make fire. So you've got to sell them on the idea that, I mean, I've fished with people like that. And at a certain point, you just throw your hands up in there and go, yeah, bucktail's the greatest bait ever. Let's just throw them. So if you've got people in your boat that are getting grumpy and you can't fish the way you want to fish, you might have to get different people in your boat. Now, the guide brain thing is, I got a million of those people, right? And there's a point where you have to say, this is the program we're running. This is how we're going to run it. And you do that with a smile on your face, and you're not mean about it. No, this is what we're doing, right? You can't do both at once. And it is what it is. So you're going to have to put your foot down and say, hey, guys, we're hitting a deep outside edge. And I'd appreciate it. Help me, quote unquote, pattern, or it'd help us be more efficient and more effective if we tried something else. Right? Because, I mean, it kills me. It drives me nuts when I watch guys musky fish. They won't give up 10 casts on that hot bait. Right? The hot bait. What's the hot bait? This lure's fire. It caught a musky today. Are you kidding me? It caught a fish today. One. It's not hot. It got a fish. It happened to be in the sun, whatever, without breaking down what happens.
Exactly.
Right?
Tell me about it.
Broken clock is right once a day. And sometimes that's all it takes.
What's your database drawing from?
Right, right.
Ooh, the one hot fish Johnny got last week, you know, that's right. The hot bait. It's just like, no.
No, dude, no. Johnny.
Think about it.
Dumbed in front of one, right? So you're going to have to sell them on it, or you're just going to have to put your foot down and say, hey, this should be productive. Because I get it. People have limited time on the water. They want to do. And I mean, the thing that kills musky fishermen is their overconfidence in certain things. You're just going to have to break them out. And if they won't do it, you're holding yourself back. Right? You're holding it, you know. You're going to have to tell them, hey, this is what we're doing. And split the time with them. Say, hey, we just made a pass on the shallow. And sometimes it's best to just suck it up, buttercup, do the shallow pass with them, let them throw their bucktails. You go, I know there's not one here. It's freaking a cold front, the middle of the day at noon, right? Let them throw their bucktails, and you go on the outside edge and grease one, right? And throw a Kraken or a Red October and show them what's up. That's the best way to convince people.
Mm-hmm.
But,
well, yeah,
but would be. Right, but the best way to do that is you've got to tell them, like, listen, we're going to fish it your way one time, and they're going to fish it my way. Right. As a guide, I can just put my foot down and say, well, we're fishing my way. But yeah, if you got a boat partner and your buddies and pals, just fish it twice. Okay. Put on your freaking bucktail. Let's go. It's, you know, it's snowing and the water's 37. Take a crack at them. And then once you show them once, you might have to show them twice, but I promise you will not have to show them thrice that there are other bites possible. That's the best way to change people. And I've done it. It's kind of fun for me. One of my favorite things in guiding is if I take an experienced musky angler who's got time under his belt and I show him a new technique, it's like, okay, here's your first fish on a tube, or here's your first glide bait fish, or here's your first trolling fish, or here's your first jigging fish. Or basically, I can get them their first fish that's not a crankbait or a bucktail or a topwater 99% of the time. You know, look, I've never caught one on diving. Yeah, probably because you throw bucktails in topwater all the time. Mm-hmm. Oh, Kenneth, why are the muskie shows dead? I went to,
why are the muskie shows dead, he said?
Yeah, he went to a show. Okay, I'm going to read this one first.
Okay.
Sorry, I don't read them ahead of time. He says, why are the muskie shows dead? I'm going to paraphrase. He said, he went to a show this weekend, and he was surprised that the vendors are even showing up. Do you think shows will be around much longer? I think they will. We have our own show at the Musky Shop. We got the Musky Shop Bash, but we do it in July there at the store. My opinion on shows is the internet changed that. So back to the other question, what will happen in musky fishing in 5 to 10 years? There's no need for a show. If somebody has a custom color or a custom bait, they have literally free platforms where they, you know, sign up to social media and you're now online. So that's it. I mean, I think a lot of it, man, you know, you look at the shows and what was the value of going to a show in the past? Let's just talk about that. So before the internet age, the modern internet age, a person could go attend a show and they could A, meet and be around other musky anglers to have a sense of community, B, mm-hmm. see new products they couldn't see unless they saw them in person and have the opportunity to buy custom-made baits or just baits in general. And thirdly, they could have seminars and learn from professionals and get information. Well, this podcast is eliminates that. So you got Muskie podcast, you have videos, you've got everything. So that's unnecessary. You can buy from the vendors 24/7, right? They've always got something going on. You can buy a Muskie bait easier than ever. And thirdly is getting together with these people. That's on you.
Like you're saying about the information, the information's all free now.
Right.
All of it. Anything you want's free. And it didn't used to be that way.
Yeah, it was
if you wanted if you wanted to, you know, see a video. I mean, there was some TV shows you could tape or whatever and watch.
Right, you can get a video.
But a lot of that stuff, the compilations and stuff, you had to buy them on VHS or what have you. You had to buy magazines for articles, et cetera, et cetera. But go on.
No, you're right. It's just different. So that's a holdover from my older age. And there's nothing wrong with that. You go to the shows, have fun. It doesn't seem. I think it's cool. I think it's cool that people are still doing it. I think. Muskie fishing is a sport of tradition and things of that nature, and that's cool. Keep going to them and doing them. I think that's changing. I think obviously this guy, I mean, it's not the first time we've been asked things of that nature, and when I hear, oh, this show was dead or that's going on, I mean, I think it's cool for people to get together. You know, it's the same thing though with the Muskie clubs and all the other stuff. You know, it's
they're social events too. Yeah, that's important to people.
I can freaking get on the internet right now and find so much free information about anything. So there you have it. You know, do you want to spend $10 to go watch some hungover guy talk? Or I can watch the video and they catch a fish. I don't know. It is what it is. I think they're a positive thing, but I mean. It's already a diminished capacity of what it once was. And I think you'll just see that. And I think you'll probably dwindle in numbers. But I mean, of course they should, you know, they need to have a Minnesota show and a Wisconsin show and all this stuff. I think it'll just be a different animal as you go forward. Drew, what is the most effective style of topwater when fishing midday for muskie?
Okay.
Well, so with midday, we don't have the seasonality there, but let's just call it spring through fall, obviously, right? Or just peak.
Yeah.
If I'm in the middle of the day, I'm thinking about a walk the dog. I've always been a jackpot guy, but I've really fallen in love with that walking boss. I think I said that previously where like I never paid much attention to it, but the walking boss is pretty rad. I'm not a big weagle guy, but a jackpot or a walking boss. And the reason I like the zigzag topwater baits, when he says midday, is because I can get it to bounce in place with a slower advance. So I can get just as much slosh and just as much noise and action with a slower advance than a Big Mac or a Fat Bastard. Right? So that would be my take there. Why I would say for a midday bite or a midday opportunity, I'm going to go that. I mean, secondly, I've done well on creepers in the middle of the day. Those are isolated events, isolated conditions where you come into that. Jay, I mean, do you have any counter thought on that, or what's your thought on like a midday topwater?
No, I agree with the walk the dog thing. It's not something I use much, hardly ever. And yeah. Midday, and it depends on where he's fishing. You know, he could be on some really cool, like Minnesota topwater areas or something like that, where I fish. It's not going to be a super effective thing to use at that time. Time and place, though. You know, if the weather and conditions are great, and they're high in the water column, and fish are aggressive. Yeah, sure. Yeah, that, but I agree with the walk the dog. I knew you were going to say that. You know, well, I've seen you. I've fished with you many times, and I've seen you break those out and do the slow advance thing with the jackpot. It's cool.
Well, I mean, and the thing is this: he's saying midday, is it sunny? Is it cloudy? Midday, I immediately thought not great.
Too. Yeah, exactly.
But you could. I mean, it could be. I mean, low hanging drizzly clouds, and it looks like musky weather, and they're coming unglued. So, I mean, you know, my knee jerk was that it needed to be slow advancing. I mean, I have had some bang up days on topwaters in the middle of the day because it's just the stars have aligned and we got high active fish, and it's you know,
yeah, sure,
things are popping off and firing off. So conditionally, so I guess the answer to that is if it's looking money and they're flying around like monkeys throwing a tail prop, if you're trying to pull, you know, I'm thinking some of these Canadian reef fish, they slide up on the top of the reef just at some weird time. You want to check it out. And I've pulled some nasty big ones on jackpots in that midday topwater warm up that will happen. That's an aside, because my brain immediately went, I'm thinking of a couple, 8-9 years ago, up on Eagle, flat as a flitter. You know, you could have barefoot water skied to place, right?
Flat as a flitter. Okay, I got it. Okay.
Just flat. I mean, just freaking stupid out there. Just flatter than you can be.
It's quiet as foam rubber in chimes out there.
There you go. And freaking tore them up on jackpots. Cool. I don't know if they're up higher for coming out of the weeds. It didn't matter that they were blowing up on them because it was like, all right, dude, can't get anything else going on. What shouldn't work? It's noon, and you will get those midday warm ups on certain bodies of water where dead flat calm, and you go, this shouldn't work, and it's not.
Were you getting indicators forage is breaking the surface and stuff like that?
No, the indicator is nothing else is working. I haven't tried this. So, okay. All logic and reason was out the window at that point. You go, well, the boat looks like a tackle store exploded. I haven't tried this. Oh, crap. That's what it was. I mean, you'll have fish on the water column. And, you know, and that's kind of like the summer thing, right? You'll get those weird summer fall windows where you go, nah, they're up high, shouldn't be, but there they are. And on the topwater thing, I mean, there's times that only a topwater will work. It's not often, but it's like the last thing that's on my radar, but it's omnipresent in my thought process, right? Where I might think a manta. I think a manta's going to work, which is like an ultra-shallow running glide bat. I'm thinking a manta's going to work way before I think a topwater will work, but I'm not waiting for topwater. It doesn't have to be like they're raging out of the water and losing their brains for me to go to the topwater, right? You know, and it's kind of like that. Like my hierarchy of what I think is effective or what's going to be most effective, you know, starts with on the deeper spectrum of things, if you haven't noticed, right? You have to sell me on the fact that muskies are active and feeding above 6 or 7. You've got to give me, I have to have far more data saying, yeah, they're shallow than I do to have to my assumption that I'm going to fish deep.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. But, you know, always have that. There's a reason that musky fishing always conversations always have this, you know, turning back to that vicious topwater strike. There's times that they're using that edge. Herbie's said it. It's been beaten before about how that's kind of the ultimate edge. And they'll linger there where I'm talking, you know, if you're not above them and there's only one way to be above them, where I've ran, you know, blades. I mean, you look at like Lee's Boilermaker, stuff like this, you think would be enough. Right, you're running a Boilermaker 6 inches under, but nope, you better have that tail prop on the surface, and then just the difference matter. But just to consider, you know, because I mean, again, being the anti-bucktail, and I'm not anti-bucktail, but I'm just saying it's not the freaking end all be all. which is don't leave top water out of that consideration on my account. Always have it in your arsenal, but season lightly. You know, it's just like, oops, too much pepper. That's what everyone's done in muskie fishing, Jay. They have the jar of pepper, and the pepper represents bucktails. They just drop the whole freaking jar in there. Then you get like, oh, sure. We're good. Single blade tactics. You better get the beaver pelt version. You better shut up. Moving on, you know, kill me. Nate, looking to get dialed in on krakens and tubes this season. Never really thrown tube style baits before. I've heard about mods for the kraken and wading mods for tubes. What can you tell me about that? And also, what do the different tails do for krakens, and what do the different tails do for tubes? Okay, I can tell you kraken real quick. So Herbie came up with, I didn't say no. I didn't say don't do it. It'll void your warranty, right? Don't tell anybody I said to do it. You can drill a hole in your kraken. Call Herbeck. His phone number's on the internet. He'll tell you how to do it if you want to get that thing super deep. The different tails. You have your standard, like whatever you want to call it, tentacle tail or skirt tail, which is your tube style tail. That is low water resistance, right? So it's just falling. It's undulating on the fall. That's it. You have the two other tails, which is a paddle tail, which turns that thing into a paddle tail. That turns into a really roly paddle tail swim bait. And then you have the pull tail, which turns it more into a bulldog Medusa style bait. So in the game of tube fishing, the two extra paddle tails or two attachment tails for the kraken are not necessarily meant for tube style retrieves, because the big tail for the kraken and the grub style tail is not going to do a tube-esque retrieve. That thing slows that bait down where it becomes a more pull paws bulldog-esque style retreat. As far as Red October, you got what, Jay? Boo tubes, which are Red October offers a flashaboo skirt, which I don't know. I mean, it's probably less material. I don't think it's going to influence the fall as much as it's going to influence it visually.
Yeah.
And
right.
Then you have, of course, their standard tube skirt, which is just the tendrils of the tentacles. Then you've got what, the twisted tube, which are like two little counterpointed tails. Is that all three of them? Or is that all of them? Is there only three?
Yeah, I believe so. Sure.
Yeah. And as far as like, you know, for the boo tube with the flashaboo, I think that's just going to give you a different visual look, right? Your standard skirt, and then that twisted tube, that is going to be just a little bit more of, I fished those. It's a little more, how would I say it? Flappy. Like, does that make it? It's like they've got them, the points are countered, and they're a little bit like a falling bait fish look to it. Right. It's in my mind, it's a little more of a solid profile, because if you look at like a tube, a crack and whatever in the water, when you're popping that thing up, it all kind of jumbles up. Right. That skirt jumps. It changes the profile of the bait. Right. And when it's falling, it's a solid profile, because tube skirts really don't do that much in the water. Everybody, they just don't. The tendrils just kind of hang back and they're there. When you pop it, they kind of puff. And so you get this changing profile, I believe, with the tube that they're perceiving. With the twisted tube, that's more of a solid profile. It kind of is committed. I don't know if that's, I think it's 10 overall on that. But that's a more solid profile. It does flap and undulate in the water, but on the fall, I think you've got a more solid profile build thing. So if I'm going to throw like a twisted tube style thing, they're locked in on bigger bait. I would think that would be my only real choices between like the flashaboo skirt, a standard skirt, and the twisted tube style. Then you get into, with that, you can augment these things so much. You've got the frickin' next level mods at Musky Shop with the blade kits. You got frickin' a million different things you can add on the back. So I would say if you're going to get dialed in on regular tubes or kraken or whatever, the most important thing I would say is just start with a standard tube and get the feel for that, because the most important thing you can do is work that thing at depth, right? Beating the horse here. But most people fail to let that bait get down to where it needs to be.
Yeah, tubes aren't designed for working, you know, shallow water column. They're just not.
Right. Well, you can, but should you? you can work any of them shallow. You know, anything's a topwater if you're real fast enough.
Yeah, with the rod tip up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing too is with the so many people are interested in adding teaser blades to the end of red October tubes,
mm-hmm.
and I think they're just looking for something more. But in my opinion, I'm not really. I've used a lot, especially 10-inch red October mm-hmm. tubes. You know, they excel without anything on the back. That it's augmenting the way the bait runs, and mm-hmm. I'm not in favor for it. I know you've modded some that we've used. You've modded Krakens.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a hot Kraken. You've got like this super duper white, you know.
Yeah.
What do you got on the back there? It's a willow blade too, I believe, right?
It's French.
A French blade. Okay.
And I've got a French, but that's one I've modded that's super heavy. Because the second
you... Okay, you're running a lot of weight on it, mm-hmm. and you're running a blade, so it's still got... It's still falling achieving fast. Depth fairly quickly,
yeah.
and it's got that added vibration and flash, I mm-hmm. guess, is what's doing it. So it's still kicking and popping the way you want to with the added weight.
I'll tell you something freaky, and this mm-hmm. is just from working Krakens.
Mm-hmm.
Is, and this is me being lazy in a shocking twist. And I did it this year for about a few days. And I went, oh, how long can I run this bait this way? I just ran a Kraken with no skirt and caught as many fish. Just no skirt. Just a freaking, just the body. Because if you look at a tube skirt, like take, I made the Kraken, folks. I'm not knocking it. Take a Red October, take a Kraken, take any tube, just drop it in a pool. And what's going to happen? That skirt's not doing a whole heck of a lot, right? You know, they kind of just, they're there. It's not like that you'd think it would be this undulating mass, and it's not. It kind of flips around when you're working the bait, you know. And I had a Kraken, and I just had a tail blade on it and caught as many fish. So it helps. Obviously, it's part of the bait. Don't get me wrong. But you can augment that. I mean, I think the thing you got to work out or look out for on your tube style baits is anything preventing me from hitting my target depth. They work when you're getting to your target depth and you're clothing the proximity,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
which is most people are. Most, you guys realize that listen to my shit long enough. Most people are grabbing baits out of their tackle box going, this should work with no reason why. Right? Imagine your cardiologist has you on the table. Your chest is opened up, Jay, right? And he just grabs a random tool and goes, this should work, right? Why? Well, it worked on the last guy, sir. That was a foot surgery. You know, think about why are we applying our tools in certain scenarios? And that's what's lost on a lot of people. And people like, they go buy a bunch of Krakens or buy a bunch of tubes. And you're like, you have to work them right. You have to use them applicationally. And I think when it comes to modding, like you said, a lot of people are just rear blade crazy, right? Give me a reason. You have to have a reason there. Am I standing out from pressure? Am I trying to enlarge the profile, or do I need more action? There's the only reasons I'm running a blade, right? Am I enlarging the profile and the action of the bait? If you don't need that, right, if there's no reason where you go, heck, man, this is really big forage base, or unless I'm working the crap out of a bait, they won't come and look at it. Like sometimes you have to be punching, like you have to be working baits immensely hard to get their attention. I'll add a blade when I don't want to work as hard because it increases my vibrational profile, my presence in the water, right? And it's a trade-off. Anytime you mod a bait, there's a trade-off. So anytime you add a bait to the back of one of these tube-style baits, you're slowing its fall. So think about, you know, again, don't dump the whole jar of pepper in there, Jay. Here we come. Dumping it in there. Anyway. Yeah. Goodness gracious. Great baits of fire. I don't know. Running of the mouth every week, folks. Dial in to hear why you shouldn't throw bucktails. Somebody's like, I've caught one. I'm sure, you know. There's nothing wrong with it. Don't get me wrong. But think.
Yep, we've been over it. Yep.
Think before you do. And that's the biggest thing with bait modding. I mean, that's just a rabbit hole I live in. Is
why are you doing this?
Why are you doing this? Ask yourself that every now and again on the boat. It's a great thing to ask yourself. Why am I doing this? Not just, but I ask myself all the time, why am I muskie fishing, right? Like, why am I doing, not that deep, right? We don't need to have an existential crisis on the boat. But when you're making those augmentations, and I think in everything, when you're doing anything, whether it's modding a bait or fishing an area, ask yourself, well, what's the logic behind this? What's led me to this result? Or am I just doing it because everyone else is doing it? Eh? Eh. Mm-hmm. Critical sure. thinking. Some people just can't do it, Jay. It's impossible. So anyway, Jay Bird, say good day.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
All right, guys. Later.
Talk to you.